Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now we join today's program of the Commonwealth Club.
Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of Inforum. Inforum is a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. I'm Adisa Banjoko, hip-hop journalist, author of Lyrical Swords, Volume 1 and 2. This panel is about the roots of the hyphy movement. I first got hip to the hyphy movement about a year and a half ago. I started seeing that there was a new trend in the Bay, and after talking to people like Eric Arnold and Tamara, I started talking to more people about it. By the time my book, Lyrical Swords, Volume 2 came out, I actually realized that my book had a few hyphy guys in it. But this was a national phenomenon by the time the book dropped, and I was still trying to understand it myself. So we have a fantastic panel to help break down hyphy, its connection to another movement down in the South called Crunk, and other trends inside the hip-hop subculture. I'm going to introduce the panel. We have Tamara Palmer, freelance writer, editor, and DJ who frequently contributes to SF Weekly and is also the author of Country Fried Soul, Adventures in Dirty South Hip Hop. I highly recommend you all pick it up. There it is. Trax-A-Million, the producer behind many of the hyphy movement's greatest hits, such as Super Hyphy, Grown Man, and Waking Him Up. He's considered one of the hottest producers in the industry today. Right next to him is Mr. FAB, first got national on MTV's program My Block when he introduced the Thiz movement. He is best known for his hits Super Sick With It and New Oakland, and every Friday night he has the Yellow Bus Show on 94.9. Eric Arnold is a hip-hop journalist from for the Bay Area East Bay Express and has covered the hyphy movement from its beginning. His articles have led to many national stories and publications like Newsweek, Vibe, etc. So give a round for our panelists, please. I'm going to begin the talk trying to define what hyphy is, because depending on who you talk to, you're going to get a slightly different answer. So for an opening, could each of you just tell me, starting with Tamara, what is hyphy to you?
Well, the way that I usually describe it to people that have no context for music or even our area is that it's just a youthful expression of energy. And I put it in those really general terms because it's something that, you know, as we go down the line, we're going to hear different details, different takes on it. But that's the most general way that I would describe it to people.
Trax-A-Million.
Just a genre of music, just a sound. You know what I'm saying? To me, hyphy is a sound that you get or a feeling that you get when you listen to a certain genre of music.
FAB, how do you define hyphy?
Hyphy is a cultural phenomenon that's exemplified through music, through dance, and through everyday lifestyle. And it's just right now, and it's being exploited by the mainstream media and different publications as just a musical term. But it's more than that. It's actually a lifestyle and a branding.
Eric Arnold.
Well, hyphy is originally a term that means a combination of hyper and fly. So if you put the two together, you get hyphy. I would agree with Fab that it's a cultural phenomenon. It's also a lifestyle in terms of it's a way that young people today, I'd say between the ages of 12 and probably like 25, are actually living, and how they look at life, how they feel life, and just how they express themselves. It's also a release from, you know, the strains and stresses of the life that they have to go through. And really, for young people out here, it's kind of hard these days. So that's why they have to express themselves as being hyphy.
Now, Trax-A-Million, as a producer of this sound, what does it mean to be a hyphy producer? And what are the nuances in a hyphy beat that differentiate it from more the traditional hip-hop sounds that people might be familiar with?
Hyphy beat definitely would be upbeat, drum heavy. Those are the elements I look for, you know what I'm saying? Definitely just up-tempo, something that you can dance to. I really don't know, man, because I've been, you know what I'm saying, I tell people I've been making beats like this for years, you know? And
Now everybody else is catching up to you.
Yeah, now everybody's jumping on it. Now it's hyphy, but you know what I'm saying? You know, I'll roll with it, man. Hyphy. You know what I mean? I try to just stay with whatever's hot, man. And if hyphy's hot right now, you know what I'm saying? I'll make hyphy beats.
FAB, as a lyricist, what does it mean to be a hyphy artist today? Or not to define you as a hyphy artist, but to be an artist that can make hyphy music?
Well, hyphy, so like I say, people try to generalize it as just becoming a musical fad. And so it's definitely easy for anyone to become a hyphy artist nowadays, because all you have to do is talk about the elements of hyphy.
Just say the words.
Just say the words, and oh, he's hyphy. He's hyphy. He said Ghost Rider's whip. He said shake his dreads, show his grill. So, you know, that's, like I say, it's beginning to definitely become so every day in the terminology and the uses that if you say one word, then you will be like, oh, hey, that's hyphy right there, right? And it's not that. To be an artist, what you have to do is you have to narrate the things that the streets are talking about and speak for the people that's involved in the hyphy lifestyle, not just the people that want to go to the club, because there are people who are hyphy who have never been to a club, who don't go party, who don't dance. They hyphy. And it's because of the lifestyle that they live, that they come up from. And so as an artist, you have to not only speak upon that upbringing that they go through, but you have to also be knowledgeable of it to definitely really be considered truly hyphy. Because if you're not knowledgeable of it, then you're just like, it's just a Carmen copy. It's like watered down hyphy. And a lot of artists right now are becoming to have a nationwide mainstream attention, and they're watered down hyphy. And so it's really making it hard for the artist that's really hyphy, because no one wants to really see what really hyphy is.
Right.
You know, they'd rather take the watered down version, you know? Hey, go ahead. So that's what it is. It's, as an artist, you just have to be able to make an understanding with yourself. Is if I'm going to say this music lifestyle, when someone meets me and when someone talks to me, they have to be able to visibly see that I am what I say I am in this music.
So authenticity is a key element.
It's pivotal to be respected in the streets where hyphy springs from. You have to have the authenticity. If not, then it's just like, man, he ain't hyphy. He don't go. He ain't hyphy. And that's how they gonna do you. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, make sure you, when you do it, or when someone's involved and participating in it, that they're truly doing it, that they're being themselves. Because you take the passion out of it. This is something that we created, as Eric said, as a relief. This is our outlet. Don't mess it up, you know?
For Tamara first and then Eric, how is hyphy like or unlike crunk or snapped or chopped and screwed, and in its sound and the nature of the subculture? And also, talk to me about how you feel the media has accurately or inaccurately covered it. And we'll start with Tamara.
I want to address something that Fab just said, which I thought was kind of interesting, which is that once certain things get more popular, they don't want to be acquainted with the real danger and the violence, the reality behind the movement. There's a tendency to kind of cartoonize a movement, make it friendly, family-friendly maybe. Real quick, I just want to ask you what you think about that.
I mean, it's...
Because that ties into what the media is doing.
What it is like I say, the people... It's easy for someone to... Please take no offense in this. But for you to write about it and say, okay, well, I was at this one particular show and this is what happened, and it was so hyphy. But for somebody to really be on the street, on hanging out on the corner, and be in the middle of a drive-by, you know what I mean, or in the middle of the police coming and jumping out and beating you up for nothing, just for hanging out. Then you can really write about it. You can really say, man, I've been through this. Mm-hmm. I did this, mm-hmm. You know? And then when you take, on the flip side, someone who has heard about it and start writing and start capitalizing off what they've heard, then how is that valid? How can you see the validity in that of being pure? It's not pure. It's watered down. It's by secondhand. And it's definitely by he say, she say. So personally, I feel as an individual who comes from what hyphy is, before hyphy was even being accepted as something that people can go for to be proud of being hyphy, when we were first being hyphy, they didn't like that. And they was like, man, y'all too hyphy. What's that? That ain't cool. But now it's become cool. It's become a trend. And the reason why is because media, radio, and what people accept, they've become to pick who they want to say lead the movement of hyphy. And 9 out of 10 times, they never pick the people who really hyphy. They pick the people that they can control. Like in the 70s, it was the Coolit Coalition, where you had the revolutionaries who wasn't listening to what the political propaganda was doing. They went on their own hype. They was like, this is what we're going to do. Then you had the people who would be, they were with the revolutionaries, but they also worked with the government. And the government would give them directions like, just cool down, man. Cool down. Keep it cool. And then we'll support you, man. You know what I'm saying? And that's how it is. You got the people that's the cool-off coalition hyphy. It ain't the real hyphy. It ain't OODA.
Well, I think what the media does sometimes, this is a terrible generalization, but a lot of music writers will write what I call press release stories. These are, you know, stories generated from press releases that come into their email box. Very, very easy. Much easier than to try to track somebody down that doesn't have an album out.
Right.
So that's one thing. I feel your point about how I can't really claim that I have that I'm valid if I write an observational type story. But if I interview somebody like yourself and use it as a vehicle to let you communicate it, then I feel like I'm doing a service.
Definitely.
So that's what I try to do.
That's
not what everybody does.
It's firsthand. If like, okay, Fab, I want to interview you. And now, I don't want to take this in this panel because we have, it's people up here who like, you know what I'm saying, big people. I don't want to make it just seem like I'm trying to take over the panel or whatever. But to interview me, but to interview my manager and he's talking for me. You know, that's how some things is. Like, people do PR work. You have major executives who have never came out to the streets to see what hyphy is, but they have a representative, and they report back, you know, and they be like, okay, well, this is hot in the streets right now, man. They, you know, riding whims, man, and doors open, man. Write about it, man. Put it on the cover of magazine, man.
Doors open.
You know, and that's what's going on, man. And you have people who really are from the streets. Eric Arnold, my brother that just walked in back there, JR, these are people who write because they're involved in it. They write there. They see it. Kevin Epps, he takes his camera everywhere. His DVD was one of the most, it was a hyphy DVD before hyphy was even something hot, straight out of Hunter's Point. Yeah. There was people on there losing their lives.
Yeah.
Capturing the real essence of what this hyphy movement is. And now you have people who are capitalizing off of it and watering us down. It's like it's taking the passion out of it. You know,
Eric Arnold, how do you see the media's role in covering the hyphy movement in terms of accuracy?
That's a really good question. I mean, I have an interesting perspective, being that I wrote the Vibe story. I also, you know, probably was the first journalist to break the hyphy movement, writing about it in like 2004. I also wrote the Guardian cover story on Kevin Epps back in 2001. And I can definitely say that straight out of Hunter's Point was hyphy before hyphy even existed as a term. You know, so I've been watching this culture and this lifestyle and this movement for a while. But, you know, I was also interviewed by Newsweek in 2005 when they kind of got wind of hyphy and they said, okay, well, we're going to blow this up as a new trend out of the Bay Area. Whoop, whoop. And you know, and it was cool to get interviewed by dude. But then when I saw the article, it's like, you know, he used probably about 30% of the material was like direct quotes from me, but he took them as himself. He didn't attribute his quotes, which is what you're supposed to do as a journalist. And so there's a lot of that going on where people that are not from here that really have no idea of what's been going on in the Bay, how it got to this point, and what the movement is all about, are just kind of like putting their two cents in. And, you know, like Fab said, you know, half the time or maybe even 8 out of 10 times they'll be wrong. You know, now I can't really speak on like the politics behind the scenes in the Vibe article, but that was a really important article to have come out at that time in terms of what it does for the Bay Area and in terms of getting back the national recognition that we didn't get. you know, for a 10-year period after Tupac died, you know, in 1996. But to bring it back to the original question, which was, you know, how does Hyphy compare to Crunk and Chopped and Screwed? Crunk, for those who don't know, is a movement out of Atlanta. Chopped and Screwed, for those who don't know, is a movement out of Houston. The main thing to keep in mind is that all three movements, Hyphy, Crunk, Chopped and Screwed, all started independently, meaning that it wasn't a whole lot of major label involvement in the scene. It was all just people networking and doing the mixtapes and DJs getting involved and, you know, people putting MP3s on MySpace and stuff like that, which is big for the Bay Area in particular, you know, before we started getting the radio play, the local radio play that we're getting now. These all started out as independent movements, and after a while, if you create a big enough independent buzz, big national companies are going to come in and try to commodify it. And you know, right now there's a major label kind of feeding frenzy going on, you know, and because there's a big buzz around the Bay Area. Every day I hear about another Bay Area artist getting signed to a major label. I know a lot of people are in discussions with a lot of major labels, and while that's good, at the same time, you know, the movement can get kind of thrown off of what it really started from. So I think that, you know, there's definitely a need for us to maintain our own and not just let other people come in here and make Hyphy into something that we don't even benefit from.
Now, one of the things that, you know, when you're talking about Hyphy in the Bay, one of the first things that comes up visually are the sideshows. Traxxamane, talk to me for a moment about the sideshows, their history, what you've seen and heard, and how do you feel? Because, you know, that's one of the things that scares people about Hyphy. You know, I wrote a letter, an open letter to Jerry Brown suggesting that they have a legal space for people to do sideshows because I think it's just an aspect of young car culture, just like, you know, when they have the monster trucks and all of that, and I think it should be legalized. Talk to me about the sideshows, though. And for those that haven't been to a sideshow, what should they expect to see?
Basically, wilding out, man. The sideshow is basically, I'm from San Jose, and they don't really do sideshows out there. Well, this man's from Oakland, California, is where the sideshow was born, in my opinion. And, you know, they out there, and they swinging cars. They, you know, any kind of car you can find, they doing donuts and whipping nuts and just wilding out. You know, it's basically just having a fun time, you know what I'm saying, after a party or, you know what I'm saying, just somewhere for the youngsters to have an outlet and you know what I'm saying, really do what they do.
Fab.
I'm pretty sure Fab can elaborate a lot more on that.
the impact that the sideshows have and the love for the cars and the lifestyle is the same as NASCAR, as drag racing. It's the same love. It's the same excitement that you get, the adrenaline that you get from racing a car, to see Dale Earnhardt run the Indy 5, and you're like, whoa, he just did 200 around that turn. Man, did you see how he recovered from that? And that excitement is like going to the X Games. Metaphorically, that's the comparison to the adrenaline and the reason why people want to have sideshows, or even why you would look at a sideshow and you'd be like, why would someone want to stand next to that car? What is that? Like, you know, and you would, it's like you're trying to find a proper solution to why this is happening. But if you don't have a passion for the cars or the passion for the need for speed, then you don't understand that. It's like, listen to classical music. If you don't have that passion to listen to a Mozart or listen to something of that level, then you're like, you don't understand it. It's like, man, cut that off. When some of you be like, man, do you know who that is? And it's like when you send that sideshow, man, did you see what he did? man, that was clean. It was tight. But and that's like the passion with the sideshows. That's the impact that it has. And like you say, I deal with Ron Dellums on a very regular basis. He's the new elected mayor of City of Oakland, and he too understands the passion that the youngsters have, and he wants to do something about it. It's just the insurance rate would be out of this world to take right. care of that. You know what I'm saying? But I definitely a second that motion of having somewhere where they can have a sideshow, to the dancing of the cars. It's definitely an ability to turn the cars, to move the cars as if they move the figments, the consciousness that you have to have, the definitely precision of making decisions while driving. And it's a talent, just like driving fast. I can't drive 200 miles. If somebody go over 100 miles, I'm scared. I'm like, man, slow down, please. Man, I got bad heart. So that's definitely a talent and like just a daredevil-like thing. And they get paid for that.
Right.
You know, and if there was a proper outlet or some type of opportunity for people to be involved in that and do the sideshow legally, I think people would be fans of it. And it's very profitable, as well as it's a channel of a channel to release a venting. It's like a ventilation point for kids, for certain people. It's just the adrenaline that they get. And like I said, you have to understand it to agree with it, you know, and that's what it is.
Another aspect of the hyphy movement that makes people very leery when they look at it from the outside is the use of ecstasy, the thizzing, as they call it. Tamara, could you talk to me for a little bit about how the ecstasy is involved with the hyphy movement to the realistic and the unrealistic levels? Because it's hard, I think, for people on the outside to really get a fair gauge of what's happening.
I don't know if I'm the right person to ask that question. As far as, I can rather speak to ecstasy being in the Bay Area.
Well, talk about that for a
sort
minute.
Sort of the then. History of ecstasy in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
I find it pretty interesting because this is a drug that was associated about 10 years ago with raves and dance music. And now it seems to have gained popularity in the hip-hop scene, where the music is sped up too. It's a lot closer to techno than a lot of people would like to admit at this point. But I'm not going to the events, you know, I'm not going to the big blowouts in Fresno where there's, you know, thousands of people. And I don't really know how many of the kids are taking ecstasy. Like, I would rather ask the performers.
Or Eric, could you talk about maybe what you've seen as a reporter? And
well, I mean, I would agree with Tamara that, you know, 10 years ago, ecstasy or E was associated with, you know, people with parachute pants, you know, and Cat in the Hat hats, and, you know, all these raves and stuff. And somehow it became associated with an urban movement. And it also became incorporated by the late great Bay Area pioneer Mac Dre. And what I've heard is that, you know, the raves that they used to have over at Heckenberger Road in Oakland would somehow, at home base, I think, would sometimes feature hip-hop. I mean, you started to have, like, Jungle Brothers and De La Soul and Invisible Scratch Pickles and groups like that getting featured on these rave bills. And from what I hear, an urban audience slowly started becoming associated with that culture and with that lifestyle and said, hey, this is kind of cool. Let's go with it. But I think it goes back to what I said earlier about hyphy being a release from the pressure of living in an urban environment where there are some dangerous things that are out there. And, you know, if we're going to talk about the urban environment, I mean, it's not just like sideshows and drugs and guns and what have you. It's also the fact that the schools are failing. I mean, the Oakland schools went bankrupt 7 years ago. So you have all these kids that did not get a proper education. You know, now that's got to be pretty stressful right there. You know, how do you relieve some of that stress? What do you do? You know, you got to do something to make make yourself feel a little bit better. There's really nowhere for you to go if you live in East Oakland. There really aren't a whole lot of clubs out there. So, you know, you have a little sideshow in the street because they're not going to give you anything. And then also to get back to the other point about sideshows, you know, if you talk about Jerry Brown, you have to talk about the fact that he really kind of furthered the criminalization of youth. Specifically because he was running for attorney general. And so he made sideshows a big issue in his campaign. If you went to his blog, you saw that he had a posting and several postings up on sideshows about how, you know, you know, how just distasteful it was to him that kids were doing this, and he never thought, I'm mayor, maybe I can just allocate some money to a new community center or something like that. No, he's trying to be attorney general. So there is a political agenda at play, too, you know. And so when you talk about the criminalization of our youth, that really is something that is one of the root causes of the hyphy movement. And hyphy is really a reaction to that. You know, if we're going to talk about the roots of hyphy, then let's be real with it.
I want to say something on that note too. Not to sugarcoat anything to anyone, because it's not about that. It's about being straight up and being honest with you. The drugs do have a major part in the hyphy culture. It's damn near devastating. Because you see, like, we did a show, and you see, like, kids, like, 13, 14 years old coming up to us high, like, not just off ecstasy pills, but marijuana, and any other extreme drug that they, you know, that they use. The radio's promoted, and it's not the major issue that it was a year ago, like, or that it is now. It wasn't like this until people just start blowing it up. Like he says, the political approach to stop something points out the bad things. It always points out the bad things. So when you, and the bad things are very little, but when you stop them, first when you blow them up, and you blow them up to big, big issues and mammoth issues, and you stop them, then it's like, man, he did it. Yes, he did it. And it was like, it wasn't that big in the first place, but you made it seem as if it was bigger than what it was. It's like a roach problem. You got roaches at home. All you got to do is get something extraordinary to come get it out. But you sit up and you think of something and you end it. And it's like, yes, you did it. You did it. I mean, it wasn't that hard to do. You just stopped it. But once you blow it up, you're like, man, I got roaches, man. They be everywhere, man. And you complain to everybody in your building, now everybody in the building, like, man, we got roaches here. And it be that one apartment. Like, man, everybody got roaches. So the tenants start moving out, and there's been one. You've seen two roaches. You've been there 8 months and seen two roaches, but you done blew it up so big to where you done made people move out. You done made people do other different things, and it becomes a commerce-like type thing. It becomes money now, and it's political. It's anything dealing with money. It gets issues. So when you devote so much time into stopping something, you really don't realize that the problem and the money and the time spent to stop it was far more than the time it would have been to embrace it and, you know, and open it up and really look at it. So the drugs are big, but it's easy to give someone else the blame. Like, we can say as artists, man, where the parents at? Like, they letting these kids ram off, where the parents at? But as artists, we also have to take responsibility for that. And I will be the first to admit, in the songs that I've done, I've promoted drugs. I didn't promote them like, it's no way to make it seem good. But I say, yeah, they use drugs. We use that at our shows. People be high. But I'm just telling it like it is. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, man, if you use this drug, man, this will make you feel better than this drug. And this song will seem more reality-based. But, you know, It comes a time where, as artists, we also have to make that known. Like, it is an issue. We can't ignore it. We can't say, well, man, you know, people just partying, man. It is an issue. Especially if you have concerns for the youth inside of your community, when you see youth destroy themselves. And there's no such thing as bad kids. There isn't anything like that, because along the lines of that kid growing up, there's been an elder or someone who has been older or some type of influence to him that has led to their delinquency and has also led to their mischievousness. So that child is not a bad child. That child has just been corrupted as well as been influenced by others. And so we have to be able to take a stand and let them know, man, you don't have to use drugs to make this go. You don't have to. You know what I'm saying? You see the fact of it. I come from a house, a drug-infested house, where my father and my mother was using drugs. So the issues that I push, I don't use these pills. I don't do that. You know what I'm saying? That's not me. And it's just like, you know, the music that we do, that's what it is. That's what people do. So people say, oh, man, y'all use drugs. Y'all, man, that's what people do. The people that buy our music and stuff like that. It's not saying that we promote it. We don't condone it. But we understand it. So it's like a balanced thing with an artist, with the drug use in it. We could blame the parents, we could blame ourselves. But at the end of the day, we have to understand, as well as, to order the way to stop a problem, is first you must recognize that there is a problem. You know? And I wouldn't be the first, I wouldn't lie to you and be like, oh no, it ain't a problem. It is a problem. It's a big problem.
When I interviewed San Quinn for allhiphop.com, one of the things he told me is that he felt like the ecstasy problem was going to be like, there's going to be an echo effect of just catastrophic levels down the line, and that he likened it to the crack epidemic, you know, the rate at which the young people are on it. Tracks a million, you've been quiet for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, man. I definitely think that the ecstasy use is crazy, man. I know, you know what I'm saying, I see kids in the club myself, you know what I'm saying, 13, 14, walking up this and grinding their jaw, and just, it's a mess. And if it doesn't stop, you know what I mean, it's damn near been glorified, like, you know what I'm saying, back in the days how cocaine used to be a rich man's high, you know what I'm saying, it's damn near glorified like that. Popping this is just cool. It's just cool to the youth, and that's what the youth are doing. And I agree, man.
There's an artist by the name of T-Cash. He has an album called Turf War Syndrome. Mm. And Turf War Syndrome is a term that he came up with to describe how a lot of the African-American men and women from very poor communities look and act, you know, because of like how you would have someone from Vietnam who's dealt with post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, it sounded like a very cool idea and very innovative artistically when I first listened to it and heard the album. But soon after that, I was actually around 90th and International, and I saw and heard a lot of the things that would definitely cause some post-traumatic stress disorder in me. And I was just there for a few hours, and I couldn't imagine, you know, what 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 years would do to someone. And one of the things that T-Cash told me is that he felt that hyphy was in many ways a symptom of turf war syndrome. How do you feel about that, Trax and Fab, as artists, and Eric Arnold as well?
I don't know about that. I think, man, music is music, man. Hyphy is just an expression of music, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, just the music. I mean, the way that the culture kind of evolves and the mechanisms inside.
Yeah, because the drugs get the kids on some other ish, and, you know what I'm saying, the kids, they walk around with pistols, and they over here shooting people. And, man, I'm scared. You know, I'm scared of the little 14-year-old kid with dreads and gold ones. they crazy where I'm from, man. I'm telling you, man. So, man.
Crazy, bro. Eric, hey. what are your thoughts on that?
Well, getting back to the T-Cash album, which is a great album, by the way, and everyone here should have a copy of it, as well as Mr. Fab's album, and Traxamillion's album, and Tamron's book, and Adisa's book, and my book when it finally comes out, and Kevin's movie. But I would say, getting back to the T-Cash album, if you listen to the album, he actually says, wonder why we going dumb in the first place, and how we make a better way up out the worst place. So he's relating the phenomenon of going dumb, you know, which is just wilding out. I mean, it's probably not too different from what any of the parents who might be here tonight did in their youth. It's just that, you know, the socioeconomic conditions have gotten a lot iller. So, you know, basically, it's just one of those things where, you know, you really have to look at the root cause of it, and you really have to look on it as you can't just criminalize the kids. In other words, you know, you can't just do that. And sure, these kids are, you know, again, they're exposed to a lot of strains, a lot of pressures, a lot of things that we didn't have to go through back when we were growing up. And ultimately, I think the music is doing something positive. I mean, it's taken, you know, hyphiness, just, it's not just in the streets anymore, it's in the clubs, and you know, it's on MTV, and it's on BET, and when it gets out into a wider audience and crosses over, yeah, sure, there are some bad things about that, and, you know, some political situations arise from major label politics or whatever, but at the same time, it makes it cool to be hyphy for everyone to be hyphy. And I think that maybe there's some upliftment there that you know, wouldn't otherwise exist. You know, I mean, if hyphy was just in the streets and it wasn't a music and you couldn't hear it on the radio, things would be a little worse. But because it is, you know, mm-hmm. something that is a commodity that's created by our local community, by, you know, like I said, independent artists that are, you know, trying to eat, people are eating because of that. You know, whereas, like, if they didn't have the music to support themselves, you know, they might look at other ways to get that food, to get that gouda that, you know, maybe wouldn't be so positive. So ultimately, you know, that's why it's something that, you know, I stand behind the hyphy movement. I support it, even though, you know, as someone that's, you know, not a little teen and not someone that's dizzin, you know, these are things that are a little dubious and I'm a little skeptical of. But overall, I support the movement because I think it's positive.
You know, one of the things that changed my mind about hyphy is I got invited to a turf dance competition at Castlemont High School, put on, I believe it was by Youth Uprising. And so I went to this event, and this place was packed. There must have been about 300 or 400 people at this thing. None of them were 18 years old. Not one of them. They had dance crews, and if you haven't seen a turf dance competition, I can only liken it to kind of a combination of freestyle dancing that's kind of a combination of popping and locking and breaking, just off the top. It's like freestyle dance straight up, head-to-head in teams. And it was amazing what I saw, the spirit in the kids, the way that the elders were handling the event, and there was no violence, no threat of violence, none of that. And it really opened my eyes to how different I thought the hyphy movement was, how different I thought it was. And I think it's really important that people individually try to find their ways to observe the music and the art and the culture as it is. You know, could each of you please talk about something that you would really like to convey about what hyphy and crunk and chopped and screwed and these things are that they have given or are giving young people today that they don't see in the midst of the media frenzy and the half-baked journalism that sometimes comes out about it? We'll start with Tamara and go down to Traxxamillion and Fab down the line.
I think what I want people to know about hyphy is that it's brought about this Bay Area pride that we haven't seen maybe ever musically. I mean, it's really... you can listen to a lot of this music and you'll hear streets in Oakland and Berkeley and places in San Francisco and San Jose.
Vallejo.
And Fab made a point before we started the panel that people from what might have been considered opposing neighborhoods are working together, making songs, and that's having a real effect on kids from those communities. And it's something that, what else is going to have that effect on them? Right. I can't think of anything else that's going to mean that much.
Traxxamillion.
Hyphy, kind of like she said, it brings a lot of Bay pride, and then a lot of positive comes out of it. A lot of, you know what I'm saying, like the dancing, like you said, man. I've been noticing that like crazy. There's
that's
so many dance crews. I can't even keep
watch.
My eyes. I can't even really count. Man, there's just so many different elements. Music, you know what I'm saying? I'm eating off of the music, off of the hyphy music. The kids is doing dance groups, you know what I'm saying? Staying out of the streets, staying out of trouble, and you know what I'm saying, doing something positive and constructive together. So I think the hyphy has a lot of positive things to offer.
Fab.
At the end of the day, through all the words, the main thing that what is hyphy is doing, it's cultural empowerment to say, man, look at this. I was watching a video this morning on TV in a group from down south. They had a song called Stunners. And stunners are glasses, like rape, any type of glasses that you wear. And that's they single. Like, and I was looking at it, and the whole video, I was just like, they really just gonna take our stuff, huh? Like, and they was really, like, they was with it, too, like. I'm like, they really gonna take this, huh? And one side of me was really just like, I can't believe that they doing that. Then the other side is the powering of saying, man, this came from us. This the Bay Area. This came from here. This is the power that we have to where all we doing, we little waves in the ocean right now, and we making a tsunami in the whole industry, in the whole world. I just got back from Europe on a European tour, and it was people coming up to us like, Hyphy, MTV. You know what I'm saying? The English wasn't that clear, but they knew who we were. They recognized the movement. And it's no better feeling than to feel appreciated for your works and your merits of effort of what you're doing. And I play a major part in the hyphy movement. And it's empowering. It's empowering to know that something that we do as a gift of expression and a blessing that we've been blessed with to bless others with, that they accept it and they're receptive to it and they're moving to it. And there are major parts that's capitalizing off of it. So families are being fed. People are being escaping jails and getting out of trouble because they're in the studio or they at the show or they at this dance group. And to reiterate on the question of the dancing and the culture, it's another element of the culture. It's definitely like an Afro-Haitian, a Brazilian dance. Is it capoeira? What is it?
Yeah, capoeira.
Capoeira.
Yeah.
And that's what the dance is. You know what I'm saying? So it's culturally empowering to understand that this is something that we're doing. And we're at a panel at the Commonwealth Club. I am from the hood. So, you know what I'm saying? So to be in here is like, okay, we in here for hyphy? What? Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's a beautiful thing. Like, I'm seeing people in the crowd that I probably would never be in the same room with speaking on this. You would probably never see me. I would never see you. We would walk past each other in the streets, and we probably wouldn't speak. It would just be, you're in your own world, I'm in my own world. So what this has done is this has allowed us to be in the same room, cultural differences, generation differences, communication differences. But we're setting all of our differences aside because we're trying to come to the understanding of what this hyphy is. I see one of my teachers from high school in here, Ms. Johnson. You know, it's crazy. So it's like, you know, it's a beautiful thing, man. So it's big for us.
We're getting ready to do the Q&A. So if there's anybody that has any questions, please go to the mic and get ready for that. But make sure you're asking a question and not commenting. Please make sure that you ask a question because this is a gold mine of information here. And so please make sure that you're asking a question. Real quick, each one of you, we've talked about how hyphy has gotten watered down and things like that. Just say the name of one artist who represents authentic hyphy to you, starting with Tamra.
Keep the sneak. My bad. I'm sorry for going.
All right. Tamra.
Mac Dre.
Mr. Fab.
Keep the sneak.
Turf Talk.
All right.
No, sir.
So for the radio audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club's Inform program, and tonight we're discussing the roots of the hyphy movement. Our panelists are Tamra Palmer, author and journalist, Tracks a Million, producer of hyphy music, Mr. FAB, a hyphy artist, and Eric Arnold of the East Bay Express. We have a question.
Yes, I want to pose this question to the panel. The hyphy movement... just from, you know, from my experience of seeing it kind of bubble up to the top, I'm starting to see, I'm trying to figure out how do we, what can we do as a collective? Because I know the Bay Area has been like in a great depression for the past 10 years, as you were saying, in terms of being recognized in a lot of our slang, a lot of our culture, a lot of what we, you know, especially the wordplay and just the way we carry our swagger have been like jacked by the industry. Now, recently, I heard this, seen this recent thing where Puff Daddy is saying, we hyphy. So I want to say, you know, this is real because they're jacked this and really be off and running with it because they in this real unique position. And, you know what I mean? And a lot of us get left behind. You know, a lot of the artists won't, you know. But now I want to say, how do we respond to that? And what do y'all feel about, you know, Puff Daddy saying, man, we hyphy, man. We been hyphy. I'm like, what's up?
Well, you know, that's just kind of like saying, like, how do we feel about, you know, Snoop Dogg saying for show or for sheezy or for shizzle, you know, which is, you know, or even Poppy Collar. How about, you know, Usher made a song called Poppy Collar, which many people know is a Bay Area word.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I think that hyphy has done is it's put us back on a national platform. Not only has it put Fab and Trax, you know, up on the podium here, but it's put us back on a national platform where, because people have been taking our slang, they've been taking our words, they've been taking our expressions, but now we can say that's my word, you know, and we can prove it, you know, and so it really is a phenomenal. Cultural explosion, I mean, that has just happened. And I mean, not only is it taking the area by storm, but just the fact that we could influence Puff Daddy, you know, or that we could influence some group in, what'd you say, Atlanta or wherever they were from, just that we could have a cultural product coming out of the Bay Area that's equivalent or better than anything that's coming out of anywhere in the world, I think it's pretty significant, you know. And regardless of where hyphy came from, I think you really have to look at where it is and where it's going to go, yeah. You know, in the next 5-10 years, you know.
You know, like, somebody hit me on MySpace. I know everybody know about MySpace. A group from Texas, they was like, yo, Trax, man, we the first, you need to mess with the first hyphy Texas group. We finna move to the Bay Area next week to make it official. I'm just like, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know what I'm saying? That's an influence, man. Like Fab said, man, we rippling in the water, man, and making waves.
Puff Daddy also claimed to have invented the remix, and I think there's some producers in Jamaica that might have an issue with that. So we can't be too mad, you know?
Sir, your question.
Yes, I'm a jazz, reggae, and blues type of person, so I wanted to welcome you to the Commonwealth Club, because usually I hear politicians or academic professors talking here, and it's great to hear some exposure about the younger generation's style of music. I have a two-part question. One is directed to Mr. Fab, and the other one is to the rest of the panel. I've been interested in a concept called a National Youth Service Program for probably before most of these youth were born, 26 years, where youth would be challenged to do community service. There was a bill in the Congress back in 1979. And I've been advocating this, and I have some information I want to share with you. But do you think the youth would resonate to doing something positive in their community if they were challenged to do that? And for Mr. Fab, somebody, one of my coworkers 6 months ago, got me into MySpace. And I was looking at your site last night. I noticed that you have 47,000 friends on MySpace. Now, Mr. Trax here has a respectable 6,000 or something. But I want to know your secret, because I only have close to 3,000. And most of the young people say, what are you talking about? So maybe you can help explain what I'm talking about to them.
I'm cheating. Actually, I'm cheating. I'm, okay. I'm being honest and cheating.
Have that many friends?
I'm an on-air personality on, you know, one of the biggest stations. So, I mean, every week I'm go to my MySpace page. As well as I have someone running my page for me who all he does is sits at the computer all day and sends all friend requests. So, I mean, that's the secret behind the cheating to get fans. I apologize for cheating. I openly admit it. But no,
part of hyphy is capitalism and commercialism advertising.
You got to hyphy it up. I'm doing what they've been doing to us for years. They're cheating and we don't know it.
Your question, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks so much for coming. Your music, Mr. Fab, and I guess the whole panel can speak to this, your music has incredible sticking power. Like, I just graduated from a private high school where we're all, like, Indian and Asian, and we all say, like, Ghost Ride the Whip and Shake Them Dreads. Like, it's everywhere. Your music has incredible sticking power. But I never realized before today that hyphy is more than just music. It's a lifestyle, and it's about the streets. So I'm wondering, because you have this power to tell us all this, why you don't do so in your music, and why you don't use your on-air personality and like your spots in 94.9 to tell us that hyphy isn't just about, you know, doors open, man. It's like, it's more than that.
Well, not to cut you off, but you have to go buy the Son of a Pimp album, my album. when you get that album, what you'll realize is the songs that the radio promote that I have, is like the hypey songs, like is what you would say. But if you listen to the album, you'll hear the songs that I've dedicated to my mother. I've dedicated to all the fatherless children out there in the world. whether you've been in a divorce, you were raised, the father has the parent, you know what I'm saying, the child or the mother has, whatever it is. I dedicate those songs to the fatherless children out there who really give an explanation to why they become hyphy. They don't have any fathers in their homes. I have a few politically based songs which talk about certain reason for doing things. So, like I say, it all resorts back to the media and the radio. They will only promote what will keep you uninformed. You know, they're going to promote that. Media is never, they never want you to know what's really going on. Like, remember on Men in Black when they said, every day an Arkelian battleship is finna attack Earth. What's wrong with the Americans? They don't know that it's going to happen. Like, the aliens is coming, like, every day. Like, you know what I'm saying? And like, with the music, that's what it is. It's like, they don't want you to have the informed songs. My informing songs and my socially based songs and socially aware songs, they won't get promoted. And anytime that I'm in a position to want to do that, it's like, my job's going to be on the line. Like, I wanted to interview Davey D on my show. You know what I mean? For
yeah, that probably
reasons.
Wasn't gonna happen.
And it was just
and
like,
I don't even work there.
it almost happened, but they was like, "No, sorry, Bob, it's not gonna happen. I know what y'all conversation is gonna be about." You know, so, but they would let me interview Fillmore Slim, a pimp. So I mean, hey, you know, it is what it is, man. But you know, that's why we have panels like this, where you can really get to know us. You can really see, if you really go in detail and you read a lot of things that we're involved in, you see the community work that we do outside of the hyphy, don't just ghost ride, you know, just the other things that we represent. And hopefully, as things evolve and things turn around, that we will become more known for that side of it. That hyphy is just not the music. It's this dude coming back, giving to this community, going to this dance, to the dance centers and the cultures, judging these, being a guest judge, being a surprise guest. And it's nothing with no money. It's just something that I do out of my heart of realizing that I, too, was at this spot. I, too, know what it's like to not have any positive role models or just have one. And, you know, it's a bigger thing, man, and hopefully that we will be able to exploit that side of it as well.
Yeah, also the other thing, too, is like you shouldn't expect to get 100% of your cultural information from commercial radio.
Definitely.
Sir, your question.
I think like probably Mac Dre is probably the biggest rapper, but who do you think was like the first? For the whole panel.
Too hyphy short?
First hyphy. Like.
Short.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, too short.
Too short?
The Godfather.
Short was doing something where he did a song where he didn't do nothing but cuss the whole song. That was hyphy. You know what I'm saying? This was in like 87, 88. Well, this was further than that. It was like 85. I was like 3 years old. You know what I'm saying? Too Short is really the first.
And also, I have another question for Mr. Fab. I know Son of a Pimp, the CD.
Yeah.
Is it really true that you are a son of a pimp?
That's my daddy on the cover. Like, on the cover of my album is my father. My father died of AIDS in 94. And coming up, you know, that's the lifestyle that he was involved in. He, hustler, con artist, you know what I'm saying? Pimp, whatever you called it, you know? And I didn't name my album to say, oh, yeah, you know, my daddy was a pimp, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like that. It was to say, this is the lifestyle that I come from. To be 24 years old, to have a clean record, to have two successful albums, to set a goal for myself at 15 years old and 14 years old, and every day I'm carrying out that dream and that goal, it's an accomplishment for me. And to come from the life that I've come from, it shows not only a positive outlook, but it shows a possibility to the younger people who come from the same lifestyle. And that's why the name of my album was Son of a Pimp, to show that there is a possibility for younger kids to come out of any situation. You don't have to pimp. You don't have to do something negative to rise from the inner city slums. And this music thing is something that has allowed not only myself, but many others that not necessarily even have to be from the inner city community. That can be from suburban areas, but they're channeling what they're feeling inside and what they're coming from. They're getting that out. They're talking about how unhappy they are that their parents divorced, that no one understands them in their house. They're a middle child. No one listens to them. And that's what music is about, to get out how you're feeling, because there are many people who go through the same thing. And that's what the purpose of my album was, to just let people know that you can come through. You can make it from that.
For real. Just real quick before the next question. A lot of the misconceptions I had about hyphy were broken because I actually, and you don't know this, I went to the Bars seminar. Remember the Bars thing in San Jose? I saw Fab's album, and I'm actually, you probably can't tell from the tie and the suspenders, but I'm slightly conservative. And I said, son of a pimp, I'm not buying a record called Son of a Pimp. Went on about my day. I got a Murder Dog magazine, and I flipped it open, and I read an interview with him, and he was talking about his father, and I felt so foolish, you know? Like I had become the thing that I hate. You know, the thing that prejudges, the thing that thinks it knows everything. And I was like, man. And so first thing I did was like, I gotta go get Son of a Pimp. You know? And then I saw Rap Dreams by Kevin Epps, which you all have to go see that. And you learn a lot about this man, and you will learn a lot about the movement. But that was deep.
Appreciate
Next
that,
question.
Man.
How you doing? I'm Corice from the DJ Project, also representing a group called Boogie Shack. I just had a a comment basically to the whole panel, and also a couple questions. I like to just say that I think it's beautiful that we're having this, you know, just how the movement is affecting the Bay Area and the world as it is right now. Also, I just wanted to ask to Track a Million and Fab, what you thought about the aspect, some of the negative aspects that may be, you know, affecting the community, on the phrase of like going dumb and like dizzying, how dizzying is related to like taking drugs. I don't know if you addressed that already, because I just kind of
got going
here,
dumb,
we addressed that
getting
earlier
stupid.
Before you got
okay.
here.
All right.
The whole going dumb, getting stupid, man, that's been around for years. And you know what I'm saying? They were saying getting stupid in the 80s. You know what I mean? I think it's just
Mantronics.
Mantronics. Yeah, that was my favorite joint.
Get stupid, getting dumb, go ill.
Humpty
you know what I mean? Get sick with it.
Cold, getting dumb.
And it's been around for years. So I think it's just really, it's
Beastie
a slang.
Boys.
And,
I just, well, just.
Comment on that, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a terminology for, to exemplify the lifestyle, though. You know, I mean, people take things so literally these days. The skin on humans is not thick anymore. There was a time where you can take something, you can accept it, and you would be like, okay, whatever. Nowadays, people just be like, why did you have to drive that fast? You know, the road rage and all type of, you just like, come on, man, this is what we're doing. And no insult to the question that you're asking and anything of personal insult to you.
Yeah.
But I'm just talking about in a wide scale. Like, people that know what's going on, everybody go to a party and they'll be like, oh, this is my song. And you've been to a party where it don't have to be a hypey song to be your song.
Right.
Yeah, my mama get in the club and get hypey. Play some Marvin Gaye. Play Let's Get It On the Sun. She gonna go. You know what I'm saying? And so the relatable terminology for that is go dumb, or she getting hypey, when really she just having a good time.
Right. Well, I work with youth at the DJ Project, and I always kind of say to my youth, go hyphy intelligent, not hyphy belligerent. You know what I'm saying? Just as a, you know what I'm saying? It's word power sound to the youth. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
Because the little youth are coming up hearing that, like, oh, go dumb. You know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, makes them not want to maybe go to school. You know what I'm saying? Let's go smart. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
But
why we can't go
really
smart?
Though?
Why we can't go intelligent?
I'm sorry. I have to question that. Is that the only factor there? I mean, you're saying that a song is making kids not want to go to school. Did I hear you correctly? That's actually what's happening? That you're attributing the music to
song,
that?
I'm
that there's
saying,
no other factors in
I'm
those kids' the, life that are making them not be involved in school?
I'm not saying that everybody has their own. You know what I'm saying? But I'm saying that the influence of the word power sound. You know what I'm saying? We gotta take responsibility for what we putting out in the air
Definitely.
As sound. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Uh-huh. So back in the day when you were coming up and you were like, you know, listening to hip hop and you were getting stupid fresh.
I never went stupid fresh.
You got stupid fresh? Because I got stupid fresh back in the day. And I never saw that as negative.
You wasn't never dope.
You was never dope. Fresh, but not dope.
That one day before school, though, first day of school, when you got that outfit, you was like, oh, I'm dope. I'm clean.
It might have been tight. You were fresh.
You
was dope.
Never dope.
You was fresh, though. You was stupid fresh, though.
I was fresh.
Just the terminology, man. It's not meant to be taken that way. But I see the youth sometimes aren't able to compute the difference of the literary term of saying it as well as the terminology as, you know what I'm saying, of saying that. So I honestly understand what you're saying and where you're coming from.
Yeah, that's all I was getting across. Definitely. I mean, not like pointing no finger or poking no needles in nobody's eye or anything.
Definitely.
You know,
I definitely
feel it's a beautiful thing for the Bay overall, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We've got just a few minutes. I don't want to cut you off,
thank
but
you
I definitely want to make sure they get on. That was an excellent question, though.
I'm one of his students. I'm Francois Anderson from the DJ Project. Hi to Tracks A Million. Hi to Mr. Fab.
What's up with your brother?
Actually, Tracks A Million, he gave me some, I'm a producer, he gave me some advice on producing skills, so I thank you for that.
Oh, man.
And a question I wanted to ask is, I wake up and I watch the news every morning, as y'all know, Bay Area has a lot of killing, and I want a question to ask is, do you think that part of the music and the hyphy movement has to do with the killings in the Bay Area?
No, people been getting killed.
No, you know what? I tell you a wild story. There was an event at Moses Music, which is on, is it 90?
What
is it? 90th and International.
90
okay?
14.
And I was supposed to go, and a bunch of people did go. And unfortunately, there was a young man, I think he was in his teens, and he
14.
Got shot in the face, and he died, across the street. Now, that shooting was a gang-related shoot. He just happened to be
on
in front of Moses Music when it happened. And so, to me, that was like proof positive that killing in Oakland is killing in Oakland. If you on the block on International, it can happen to you. And it just so happened that across the street, there was a Blockyard event. You know, I think that it's unfair to assume, and I'm not saying you're assuming it, but it's unfair for anybody to assume that the music has that much power. Because when I went to the Fresh Fest back in the day to go see Run DMC, I had to get my sprint on when 6ix9ine set it off.
Man, we didn't land on Hype Rock. Hype Lock ran it on us.
Yeah, I would even add to that too that I think hyphy is actually, I think there's less violence because of hyphy, because I mean it's a more up tempo, it's a more club friendly sound. I mean, if you're partying and you're in the club, you're not really thinking about killing nobody. You know, if you go back to like Bay Area music in like the mob music era, you know, the 90s, which is when, you know, I first started writing about it. You know, I mean, it was a lot more violent. Also, the tempos were a lot slower. So maybe the tempos have something to do with it, that when you raise the tempo, people just start feeling good and start thinking about dancing and stuff like that. They're not thinking about killing. You know, but regardless, it's like the killings are going to happen until we actually address the problems that cause crime in the first place.
We got one more question.
Thank you, Mr. Boopala Boopi.
Yes, sir.
One more question. Go ahead, sir.
This question is directed towards Tracks A Million and Mr. Fab. When you listen to music, you can tell that Puff Daddy or like Master P, who are like notorious for trying to bite other styles and rip off other people's music and make it their own. Like, you know, they try to stay fresh and go to any different style that comes around every few years. But like, I know there's a bunch of rappers around the Bay Area who currently reside here and are Bay Area rappers. But who do you say like are the fakest rappers that don't actually live up?
this question is about the further men.
I was just saying your opinion. Like,
I think that's a great question. If it was a personal level, if we were talking on that level. But this is about the further men of the hyphy movement as far as the progression and the positive side.
It's all about.
And so we don't
want
to degrade anyone or try to denounce anyone's a position in the hyphy movement right now. But like you say, there are a lot of people who may not be totally, truly hyphy. But I mean, we're just artists as ourselves, and we're just inspiring artists to do what we want to do. So I don't think that it's all right for us, as well as something that's politically correct, to talk about somebody else and what they're doing right now. You know what I'm saying? The main thing is just continuing to have hyphy respected on a nationwide scale.
Plus, the main ingredient for us being successful is us all sticking together, man. You
definitely
know what I'm saying? We all have to, you know what I'm saying? Like the Grown Man remix, we did that. You know what I'm saying? That was big for everybody, man. So
just coming together, man. The divisions of difference is what always stops movements, because people feel that their individual experience, as far as their individual the things that they put into it, changes everything. Like, oh man, the hyphy movement is nothing without me. And it's not that, because the hyphy movement is nothing without we.
All right.
And that's something that we have to continue to keep in a visual point of view.
Let's give a big hand to the panelists for their thoughts here tonight. Now this meeting of Inform and Commonwealth Club is adjourned. Thank you very much.